The donkey said to the tiger, "The grass is blue." The tiger replied, "No, the grass is green." The discussion heated up, and the two decided to submit him to arbitration, and for this they went before the lion, the king of the jungle. Already before reaching the forest clearing, the donkey began to shout, but not at the lion. Instead, he turned to the unsuspecting narrator and angrily proclaimed, "Jeff, you really, really need to stop talking in that ridiculous excuse of a South African accent and get on with the bloody podcast." You know what? I can't argue with that, because as the moral of the story goes, you just don't argue with donkeys. Hi, my name is Jeff Pagano, and welcome to a special episode of the Harpin and Rugby Podcast. As it is meant to mark the start of a brand new campaign involving a brand new tournament, I was going to call it the Great URC Kickoff Harp-Off, but somehow the title Don't Argue with Donkeys just kept calling to me, so I've gone with that instead. Now, you might think I'm using the name of the fable made infamous in rugby circles by Razzy Erasmus to somehow mock him, but that couldn't be further from the truth. In fact, if anything, it's to honor him. I mean, just look at the results. When he was recording videos and tweeting fables before big matches, the Springboks were winning. Over the past couple of weeks, when he's kept quiet, maybe not so much. So the numbers don't lie. Anyway, as a gesture to help welcome rugby fans from the Rainbow Nation to this new competition, I've invited four of my top Harpin contributors to split into two teams called the Donkeys and the Tigers to slug it out in a rugby-themed battle of opinions, attitudes, and dad jokes to see who comes out on top in the third of our mock quizzes. Now, I've just been handed a statement. It's from our Harpin legal department. We wish to advise all participants in tonight's podcast to refrain from mentioning the name of any rugby person or persons who may or may not have found themselves in legal trouble today. We will release a further statement once our solicitors have finished mulling it over. Mumbo jumbo. Okay, listen. So let's crack on and meet the two teams, shall we? Back for a second appearance on the pod. The only remaining ever presence in these quizzes, a warm welcome to the captain of the Donkeys. Oh, that doesn't sound great when you say it out loud. But anyway, listen, it's Mr. Neil Kigo Keegan. Welcome, sir.
Hello there. Let's keep this quiz charade going. May I say you're looking very well tonight, Quizmaster General. Hope all is well with you.
Didn't work last time. I don't know why you think it's going to work this time, but fair play to you. Right. Joining Kigo to help him try to notch his first victory is our chief supporting Leinster from Gibraltar correspondent, back for his eighth cap on the pod. Welcome to Mr. Richard Mifsud. How's it going,
sir? Good evening.
Good to have
you,
sir.
No pressure, Rich. No pressure.
It has to be said that the Donkeys may not have the best team name, but they do have the edge when it comes to experience on these quiz pods. As lining out for Tigers, we have two making their debuts. Mind you, there's no strangers to the Harpin pod in general, and leading the way for the Stripey Cats is someone making his eighth appearance. It's Rugby Kino himself, Mr. Kino Miller. Welcome, sir.
Thank you for selecting me as captain today. It's a great honour to debut at the captain's armband. I hope I can do the team proud. And, you know, mum and dad watching up in the stands there. I'm doing this one for you.
Very proud indeed.
Hate that. Okay. Lad. Hope he loses.
And joining him is someone appearing for the second time tonight. Welcome back to our chief supporting Leinster from the Royal County of Meath correspondent, Mr. Tom Coleman.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you.
Thank you all for coming on the quiz. Now, before we kick off, I just want to say, to show my appreciation, I've tried to pull a few strings at Leinster Rugby to get you a small gift. Now, to get this gift, all you have to do is, after the show, check your emails. Click on the link to the Unpost website, fill out the form, follow another link, fill out that form, pass a COVID test, pay a small administration fee, pay another fee to cover customs, and then you'll get your gift within 80 to 1,000 working days. No need to thank me all. That's grand. We'll sort that out, okay? I had to throw in that one for the season ticket holders. I'm pretty sure the lads at Leinster Rugby will take it in good spirits. I guess I'll find out the next time I see them.
Shots fired. My goodness.
Anyway, if this is your first time listening to one of these quiz pods, then where the hell have you been? But seriously, as you can probably tell from my rambling spiel so far, it's mostly just for a bit of a laugh, but we tried to harp on some genuine egg-chasing topics along the way. Basically, I'll read a question, the players will give their answers and opinions, and it'll be down to me to award tries, penalties, conversions, yellow cards, red cards, hey, maybe even the odd 50-22 where I see fit, and we'll see who's won the day at the final whistle. So if we're all ready to go, the teams are on the pitch, the crowds in the stands are raring for us to go. So let's go to Kigo to kick us off with the opening question. Are you ready, sir?
I am ready. Edge of my seat.
Actually, It's not so much of a question, it's more of a challenge should you choose to accept it. I want you to trigger the bejesus out of all the non-Leinster fans listening. I hear they're both tuning in. By telling them just how awesome the boys in blue are going to be this season.
Yeah, it's going to be a tricky one. Now, to be honest, guys, and I think it's going to be a Leinster problem when the other teams, the other three provinces, need to win a trophy based on some moral victories they've had over the last little while. Leinster have had more than moral victories, but the problem is when those victories are so high and the challenges are so small, shots fired to our provincial brothers and sisters. That means when you get to the business end of the big cup that not a lot of them would see or have seen in the last decade or so, when you get to the business end of the cup, you're not ready for war. And that's going to be the problem Leinster have again this year. Without trying to sound like a Man United fan from the 90s, winning is obviously a habit there with us in our blue underwear. The problem is once you get past the league into the business end of the cup, that's when the real challenge is going to be. And it's going to be interesting to see if lessons have been learned over the last couple of years. Will our brain trust be able to galvanize the lads when they haven't really been pushed all season? They won't be pushed again this season. There's too much there. There's too much in every facet of the pitch. That sounds really braggy, but it is what it is. It's just we're in that kind of mode. That's where we are. The problem is going to be quarterfinal, semi-final, final of the Heineken Cup. So to answer your question, two trophies, I believe, can be done and are on the table. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when the quarterfinals of the Heineken Cup happens. Will there be enough punches thrown in training to make them ready to rock and roll from minute one in a quarterfinal? Because if that doesn't happen, then we're going to have a second half performance, which should have started in the first half, which is what has been happening over the last few years. We need to start as if we mean to finish. And hopefully there's enough scraps in training to bring that second trophy back and we can celebrate.
Cool. And he passes an offload to Rich Massoud, his teammate.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's been the Achilles heel over the last couple of seasons. How do you fix it? I think potentially this new competition may fix it. But that doesn't depend on us. It depends on whether the Saffas bring their top sides to the competition. And this isn't a developmental opportunity for them. Clearly, when we play the Blue Bulls at the weekend, they're not going to have their box because their box will be doing things against some gentleman dressed in black. So I agree, it sounds braggy, but I find it hard to find a team in the URC, absent the South Africans, and I don't know what they're going to bring to the party, at this present moment in time, who could trouble us on our day. I mean, everybody has bad days. I have always maintained this, on our day, we can beat anyone. And I would probably throw in international sides into there. Because if you look at our team, it's pretty much an international side or a team of internationals, or top quality internationals. So I think there's both trophies are definitely attainable. As it happens mostly in these things, it's all about the top 2 inches and what mindset, what challenges will we meet along the way? How many kicks in the nuts will we get to make us angry? And I always hark back to the 2013 when we dropped out of the pool stages into the Amlin Cup. And you could see from the first game that they played in that competition that they were going to win it. And they just steamrolled everything in their path. And that's the mental attitude they need to bring to the Heineken. If they don't bring it, they'll come a cropper as we did last season.
Okay, that's the Donkeys. Now we move over to the Tigers, and kicking off is their captain, Mr. O'Muir.
A lot of points well made there. I went and I did some fact-checking and I double-checked, and neither up-and-comers, what are they called again, Saracens, nor La Rochelle are in the URC, so we've got a good chance in there anyway, if nothing else. I actually did a little bit more fact-checking as well, because as well as the Heineken Cup and the Challenge Cup, in the URC, there are now conference trophies as well as overall league trophies. Yeah. So if you win the overall thing, you're likely to pick up a conference one on the way. So there's actually... we could be going for a treble rather than a double. If we want to be greedy, we should be talking about the treble here.
And for once, the Welsh are guaranteed a single.
We'll see.
So the refs aren't around to join in. Sorry, I forgot.
They might mess up. So yeah, the conference trophy is a de facto Inter-Pro trophy now, which it's a thing. It's something I wanted for ages, and I'm really glad it's come around. It's a roundabout way of happening, but it's here now. And South Africa have their Inter-Pro, well, not their conference trophy sponsored by Vodacom, which made me wonder who could sponsor the Irish conference. And, you know, I thought, given the explicit entrenched North-South loyalties it has, Tato is just probably too divisive. Likewise, Guinness have probably caused too many objections on the other North-South divide in the country. So the only sponsor I can think of, the only symbol which unites us all, which could unify all corners of this wonderful isle and bring us together to celebrate the wonder of the sport, is if the conference could somehow be sponsored by a big bag of cans. That's the only thing I could think of. That or a consortium of the nation's chippers. Those are the two options.
The big bag of cans shields. That could work. That could work. Definitely. Okay, thank you, sir. And now we move on to Tom.
Well, as our colleagues in the donkey team pointed out, we could win two trophies this year. From a personal point of view, been scarred from 2010 and 2012. I always feel if you're the best team in the competition, which Leinster are and have proven over the last 4 or 5 years, that at a basic level, we have to win the URC Pro X tournament. You know, the Heineken Cup in its new format even is more of a lottery than before. You used to get rewarded for 6 good pool games and you could guarantee a home quarterfinal. We could even guarantee an Aviva semi-final, but it's just completely open. So it's just hard to know what's going to happen between now and April. I think Richard make a good point. We've been caught in the hop a few times going in. So hopefully our new South African friends can offer up a little bit more competition and depth to the tournament. It's just hard to know, I think, just hard to know how we're going to go in the Heineken Cup. As the draw proved last year, like we won 2 games out of 2 and we still ended up going having to go to Exeter in some random game. So yeah, we can win 2. But still suffering from those 2010 and 2012 scars against Ospreys, we have to win the URC first and foremost.
Right, that's very good. That's a good start, lads. Now, we're trialing some new laws for World Rugby on this latest quiz pod. But so at the end of each quarter, what we're going to do is we're going to have what's called a broken play round. So where basically anyone can jump in and add something to what's already been said, or if they're feeling really daring, change the subject altogether. So I'm declaring this first broken play round open. Anyone want to add anything to the Leinster stuff or talk about anyone else? Kigo has his hand up there. Off you go.
Yeah, we're talking about the South African teams coming in and we're kind of hoping that they're going to add a little something to the league. They will, but it's going to take a while. Little things like the travel schedule is going to be insane. You know, players getting used to different styles of play, things like that. So I don't think we're going to have much of a threat from the South African teams this year, maybe not even next year. But once they're used to the cycle, the calendar, how everything works, coming up here in November in the chucking down horizontal rain, it's going to be a new thing for them. So I think it'll take a little while for them to come in. But when they do come in, rising tide raises all ships, as they say, and that's going to be a positive. We've just got to hang on for a couple of years. This type of punditry should be behind a paywall, let's be fair.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anyone else?
I'd like to counter that point by the donkeys. I think the South Africans will bring it from day one. I think they're used to playing in 2 competitions with the Quarry Cup and the Super Rugby. So even though they've lost a raft of players over the last few years since the last World Cup to Europe, they're still a fairly strong, you know, the benefit we used to get in playing in the British and Irish Cup, which is gone by adding depth, they have that all the time with the Quarry Cup. And they don't have Europe to contend with. Like come what, March, April, and there's no international rugby down at that time in the Southern Hemisphere. I think with those factors, I think the South Africans are going to be right in it. And you might even see a repeat of Saturday's game as the final come next May.
Interesting, interesting. Okay, that's a great first quarter, lads. I'm going to be just for the first quarter, I'm going to be very generous, give everyone a converted try, and we're going to call it 14-0 at the end of the first quarter, but we'll get into the real scoring now when we come into the second round, okay? So now we move into the second quarter. And what I want for the players to do here is to harp on the other 15 teams in the United Rugby Championship. We've spoken about some of the South African teams, but we're going to go in a little bit more depth. So what I've done is I put all the team names on a wheel, which I'm now going to spin to give the subject matter. And I promise you, the players have no idea who they're going to end up with. I haven't told them in advance so they can prepare. That has absolutely not happened. Okay, so listen, first up in this round is Kino. So I'm going to spin the wheel for you. Here we go. and it has landed on Connor. No, wait, Munster. It clicked on one more wheel. sorry, Kido. There you go. I know you wanted Connor there, but sorry, it's landed Munster. You got to go. So off you go. Talk about Munster.
Okay, let's see what I can pull off the top of my head here. So yeah, Munster. Munster, this is their year. This is their year, like English international football or Mayo. Well, they've got a good, solid to quite good front row. Kilcoyne looking like he's angling for that, starting grid jersey in green off of Cian Healy. Their depth might be a little bit light at hooker, but I'm a really big fan of Kevin O'Byrne's excellent running play. And even more so, the most luscious hair I've ever seen outside of a Timotei ad. They're really well resourced in the second row now. Jason Jenkins and the upcoming addition, return of Orgie Steinman to the stocks of Tyburn, Finian Witcherly, Thomas Ahern, really well stocked in the second row. Now, obviously, Stander's a huge loss, but Gavin Coombs looks like he's just tearing up trees in that 8 jersey. He has the potential, I think, to outstrip Stander in red and possibly even in green. He really is just... I'd absolutely take him in a second, even with the back row stocks we have in Leinster. Craig Casey is absolutely barking at forwards and firing bullets, and he's keeping Conor Murray on his heels. And there's absolutely no resting on his laurels there, despite being on a Lions tour. Young set of out halves. If Joey Carberry can stay fit, he is a man who can get a back line purring. And for a fullback playing out of position, he looked pretty good from the tee as well at the end of last season. D'Alende and Farrell, they're really solid centre partnership, you know, some really good options on the run and pass from D'Alende and from Farrell as well. And Scanlon's more than able to fill in there as well while needed. I suppose then you get to the backs and, you know, Earls, Conway and the prodigal son Zeebo they're more than just fan favourites, and they're still back box office despite being over 50 in backs years. The big story right now, obviously, is Zeebo, who could just be the creative spark they need in that back line to get things moving more consistently for them. A number of players retired or moved on from last season, and they've got a rake of young players with really a lot of potential, having a fair bit of responsibility thrust onto them this season. But I think if they can step up to a consistent URC standard, that'll be half the battle for them this year. So I suppose, in summary, Munster, they've got a fire lit under them this season. And if they can stay away from the accelerants, they could well end up with silverware.
Very good. So you mean the second place trophy for finishing behind Leinster?
Yeah. Let's say that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Junior, I didn't know Keane was a Munster supporters club president there. That's a turn up for the books now. You think he's wearing blue underwear, but I think there's red suspenders on, if you pardon the mental image.
Okay, so next on the list we've got Mr. Tom Coleman. We're going to spin the wheel for you and see who you end up with. And you've come up with Ulster, the men from Ulster. Off you go, sir. What are their chances this year?
I was hoping for Leinster B, but that'll do. I like what McFarland is doing up in Ulster the last few years. I still think they're a very young team. Looking at their players, the likes of Eric O'Sullivan, Young McCann, Timoney, Balakoon, who else? Aaron Sexton, Lowry. So they have a really good lots of young players coming through. I suppose Ulster's season will really be based on their more experienced players. To me, that's it. I think they've done all the hard work in bringing these youth players through, and the likes of Nathan Doak is coming through as well. But it's the old heads. Jack McGrath was missing for a lot of last season. If he can find some of his lines and Leinster form, he could make a big difference to Ulster. But the chances of him being called up from Ireland is probably slim at the moment. Henderson hardly kicked the ball last year for Ulster. He played more in the Rainbow Cup than he did in the rest of the season, I think. Osprey, I think it's October 2020 since he played for Ulster outside the Rainbow Cup. So, you know, the spine of the team there, McGrath, Henderson. There's still questions at 10, Burns and Madzer. They are overly reliant on Cooney at 9. So it doesn't strike me as a half-back pairing that'll win you tournaments up against Munster or Leinster or what the Bulls or the Sharks possibly could bring. The addition of Vermeulen is huge. They needed him after the losing a couple of key players back to South Africa. I like the likes of James Hume, another young player at centre. I just think it'll be another season of nearly for Ulster. They'll probably take a scalp or two in the Heineken Cup. They're always hard to beat up in Ravenhill, but just shy again. Hopefully they'll stick with McFarland, as those young players, and most of them are under 25. Stick with them, because, you know, they might be the one that might eventually steal the title off Leinster. But it's the key guys, the key lines that are missing, McGrath and Henderson. How much can they get out of the pitch for Ulster this year? And that could make the difference.
Okie dokie. Now that moves us on to Keigo. Go back to the Donkeys now. Keigo, let's see what the wheel has for you. And it's Connacht. I know you're well versed in all matters Western. So off you go, sir.
Absolutely beautiful out west. I'm wearing my cowboy boots. Here's the problem to start the league off for Connacht. They're away. All the other provinces are home. They're away to Cardiff, which, you know, it'd be nice to get settled up at home. They play Munster there in October, which is going to be the first sign. I think there was a lot of positivity for Connacht last year. They beat Munster. They beat Ulster. In between that, they took a hammering, I think, hammering from Leinster, and they were able to come back. A lot of things need to go right for Connacht, as we know. They need a run of injury-free play. Andy Friend is doing really well, trying to keep that attitude that Lamb had built. He's trying to keep that going. But if you look at the players that have come into the big jersey, the big training camps, that's increased. I tried to make a count up, as you said, Connacht there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 of them have popped in to the big jersey. They bring that back to the squad, and everyone lifts up. You got leaders like Delan in there. Blade is starting to get more game time. Cardi's in there. Aki, obviously. Beelum, Marmion. All these guys have experience that they can bring back. Connor Dean is there as well. He's got a good bit of class in his genes, which is really important. But I think the worry is they're away at the start. So I think their season starts against Munster in October. I see them finishing top three. I think they're going to wilt due to injury. And when the Six Nations, November games, all that sort of stuff starts, their leaders are gone. So that's where the problem is. For Connacht, I'm within my limit. That must be worth a bonus point.
Right. Okay. We'll see. We'll see what the jury says at the end of this round. Okay. Moving on to Rich. Now, that just leaves you with 12 teams to cover in 90 seconds. I might go easy on you because you've already kind of talked about the South Africans. So we'll see how far you get. Okay. Off you go. Talk about all the other teams going now.
Okay. Well, I'll start with the champion, the current Rainbow Cup champions, Benetton. It's a shame a shame for them, but it's obviously good for Garabisi because he's moved on to Montpellier. I don't see them posing the threat that they posed during that purple patch that they had in the Rainbow Cup again this season, which is a shame because I think that was much needed. We had a cameo the previous year from Zebre. And then Benetton over the Rainbow Cup having been absolutely awful during the regular season. So the Italians, I don't think will pose a threat. I really hope I'm wrong, but I don't think they will. I'll pretty much say the same thing about the Welsh sides. I don't know what it is with them. They used to have two very good sides, in effect, and that was the Scarlets and the Ospreys, but they've just seem to have gone back into a shell. They seem to not like this competition, so don't really mentally seem to care much about this competition. So I don't see them doing well again. It'll be interesting to see the Scottish sides, how they develop. I think Edinburgh made great strides last year, and Glasgow was coming back into it in the Rainbow Cup. So hopefully those two will also get back into it and make it quite competitive. The Saffers, that all depends on who they pick for their teams.
Right, bit of broken play to end this round. Anyone want to jump in on anything?
I think not that I'm picking on Keigo. It seems like there's a pattern forming here.
Please, yes. Pick away.
I'm sorry to my Galway friend, but I think Connacht are really going to struggle just with the format. You know, the three teams we spoke about beforehand, Munster, Leinster and Ulster. Connacht, by default, they're in their conference, for want of a better word. They went to games. And I just think that's just a bad start for them. I think the fact that they've got to play the rest of the provinces twice, even though they've done well. So I'm not saying they're going to lose all six, far from it. It's just a decent team like Connacht. I put the Stormers in the same bracket. Just struggle with having to play the Bulls and the Sharks for the same reason. It's the format that might be the biggest thing to trip up Connacht.
Can I just jump into this exercise in bullying from Tom? I hear what you're saying. I understand it. This is like a therapy session. I hear what you're saying. I would respectfully disagree. I think the between the years has changed quite a bit in Connacht over the last kind of 24 months or so. I guess it is kind of similar in the three other provinces where they kind of survive on moral victories, but Connacht have beaten Ulster and Munster recently and beaten them well. Like, it wasn't, you know what I mean? They really put it up to them. I think Ulster and Munster kind of looked at Connacht as their chasing second in the four provinces, and Connacht were able to get the grip between the teeth. Now, a lot has to go their way. The format is one thing and all that. They do need fit players, and that's it. You know what I mean? Like, if they're able to keep a season full of fit players, they can deal with formats. But the problem is they won't keep a team of fit players because they don't have the resources. So that's going to be the problem. But I do still feel that there's enough grit, there's enough annoyance, there's enough anger, there's enough, you haven't taken care of us kind of vibe bubbling under the surface in Connacht to get them emotionally through a lot of these games. I think there'll be a lot of big wins and stupid losses. I think that's going to be the issue for Connacht, the stupid losses. If they can bring that back, even bring the points loss back a little bit and stay in the hunt, once you get down to the business end of the league, if you're being told you've got to go to the sports ground, that's worth a couple of points in and of itself. But yes, I hear what you're saying, Tom. I just wish you'd stop bullying me. It's just ridiculous.
Brilliant. Okie dokie. Well, that was a good round there. Let's see how we do in the scoring. Well, Keno and Tom started off really strongly, I thought, with Munster and Ulster. So I'll give them a couple of converted tries. As for the donkey, Kigo, you did well on Connacht, you a try, but I'll give you a try for that. But I'm hearing from the TMO that there was some high tackles went behind me. There were some signs being shown to try to distract the opponents during the play. So I don't know what I don't think I'll give you. I may not give you the conversion for that try. We'll just leave it at the 5 points. Now, Rich, you had all of 90 seconds to talk about the rest of the league, and you didn't manage to mention the back row options of the Zebra Academy. I mean, what's going on, man? Seriously. I mean, you've got to talk to
Chris. Oh, come on, Rich. Seriously. That's why you're here.
What is going on, man? It's like the standards have slipped. But listen, I'll give a couple of drop goals, just, you know, maybe, I don't know, sympathy or whatever, because we're all feeling good today. So that means get to halftime. The score is Donkeys 25, Tigers 28. So it's still all to play for. We're very close. So while the players are going to the dressing rooms, pouring over videos and charts and whatnot, we just about have time for a quick word from our sponsors. This episode of Don't Argue with Donkeys is brought to you by RTE Player. If you like screaming with your streaming, whinging with your binging, and suffering with your buffering, then this is the service for you. RTE Player, where you'll get to watch all your favorite shows and box sets eventually. Right. Now on to the third quarter. And leading off, this time we go back to the Donkeys, and it's Rich. So it's your lead question here. And now you thought your last question was easy. Wait till you get a load of this one. What can we do as fans to help promote the women's game in Ireland? Go.
Go. Well, the first thing I'd say is that we don't get to understand it. We don't get the right to talk about it. Only those people who've been suffering, like those poor Connacht girls last weekend at Energia Park, get to talk about it, get the right to talk about it. And I say that because, what this boils down to is culture, pure and simple. There is a cultural issue. I've read a few email threads over the last week, 10 days of various issues that affecting the women's game in Ireland, and it's all about culture. It just boils down to they're unimportant. You know, we're focusing on the men's game. We're focusing now on the sevens, which was also marginalised for many years. But now that it's sexy, we'll do that. There's been some investment into the women's game. They've tried to do some things. They promised an awful lot, which hasn't been delivered. Clearly, COVID has had a huge impact, but that's it's had a huge impact across the piece. But when you read some of the comments from people who are in the know, and things such as players not being allowed to talk because of repercussions, women only being allowed into the IRFU's committee if they'll play ball, you know, toe the line. That's just bloody sexist, you know, from the off. The only way this is going to be resolved is if there is a level playing field. And the level playing field has to start from the top. And when you've got a committee that's 25 strong, 22 of which are men, three of which are women, but they are, yes, women, because otherwise they wouldn't be there. At least that is the allegation. But it seems to be pretty well founded, in fact. Then you've got a serious issue. I'll just throw in a smidgen about life here in Gibraltar and about women's rugby. As you know, we now have a home of rugby, a place where we can play rugby. And we only implemented women's rugby a couple of seasons ago. Well, bloody hell, it's grown exponentially. The minute you do something, the girls are out there who want to play. You know, women's rugby was unheard of in Gibraltar 18 months ago. Completely unheard of. As in, really? And now we can field two teams. Okay, it's only about 40, 45 players. But for a place of Gibraltar size, that's huge. So, you know, extrapolate that to Ireland, where there is a rugby culture. You know? So what I'm saying is, you need to give women a level playing field. You need to invest heavily. And you should, you know, I shared some Twitter threads with Jeff earlier, which hopefully he'll put up there. But if you really want to get down to the bottom of things, follow at Irish Women's on Twitter. And believe me, some of those comments, facts, evidence are pretty disheartening, and you know, a lot of people should be really ashamed of themselves treating people like that, because that, you know, nobody deserves that. Absolutely nobody deserves that. So you know, invest in it, for goodness sakes. I mean, even without the investment, look how well they've done in the past few years, and this starts at grassroots. Put the money in there, you know. Yes, COVID's hit a lot of people, but Christ, you know, get on.
Definitely. Okay, moving on to Keigo there.
Yeah, following on from what Rich said there. Look, there's things we can do ourselves. I know you guys, Jeff, Rich, Key and Tom, you're brilliant at retweeting stuff. And that's the start. Everyone listening to this, retweet the tweets that go out from Irish Rugby with the squads and all that sort of stuff. All these algorithms add up. If you make it worthwhile on social media, businesses will start asking questions. Business asks questions, it takes the Blazers out of the game. Because Rich rightfully pointed out that, you know, 23 or 25, 22 or 25, Ormond Devil Mats here. We're not talking about Irish education. We're talking about rugby. But there's not enough women involved in the decision-making. Whereas if we can take control of this by sharing it on social media, making it important, And taking an interest, obviously watch the games as well, go to the games, buy tickets. But social media is what these guys look at. They're looking for what the audience is. Sharing and all that sort of stuff adds up. So that's something we can all do straight away, obviously while taking an interest. And I think the fan base of rugby is very proactive in spreading the word of women's rugby. It's a great thing to see. It's once you get up that into the boardroom where they're miles away from us. We're sitting in the stands. They're miles away in the ivory tower. They don't know what real life is. So we've got to take their decision-making away from it. If a sponsor comes up and says, here's 500 grand over 5 years, they won't think about it. They'll say yes, because it's money. The next step, as Rich alluded to, is representation. We need to get more women on the decision-making board, or just making a women's decision-making board. This is a microcosm of a bigger problem in this country. And look, we need to trust women. We need to give them decisions. We need to give them power. Everyone loves the women's game. Everyone enjoys the women's game. Look at Bavin during the week. You could put that on any pitch, in any sport, anywhere, and you would pay money to see it. So let's just do what we can.
Okay, moving on to Tom.
Yeah, well, for my part, my small part, I would say, I'm quite involved in women's rugby in my local club. Like, I coach it under 14, under 16, and under 18 in the Northeast with Skerries. So what works, I can see what works for girls and women's rugby, but then I can see down the line some of the issues that the Keigo and Richard have mentioned further down the line. Like, what really works is if you've got a club and a chairman and all the committees that are involved, like the main committee or the rugby committee or the finance committee, that buys into getting women's and girls rugby, really pushes it, promoting the Give It A Try program, encouraging coaches, training coaches, that can really boost the numbers. And as one thing Richard says, once you give them the field, they'll come, you know. And if they don't feel like this is a boys' environment, that it's their club, when they walk down, this is, you know, we would reinforce that message with the female members and the youths. This is your club. You have every right to be as down here as much as anybody else. But I think the further you go up the chain, the more problems you can see. I think in Leinster, there's about 41 what we call CCROs, which is sort of club community. And I think 37 out of the 41 are men. Now, I know a good lot of those guys, and they're all interested in women's rugby. But it sort of does mirror an issue that, A, they don't have enough time to promote girls' rugby in schools and in female schools. So they're really stretched. So it's down to a lot of clubs as well to try and employ their own CCROs that can go into women's rugby and disability rugby, which is another big, big thing for me. Not enough clubs are doing it. It's a sort of step on from what we're talking about. So I can see a lot of stuff on the ground. I just checked the WhatsApp there before we came on. I'm on like a head coaches group for Leinster at under 16. And like, there's 50 head coaches of 50 teams across under 16 in Leinster. And they've all got coaches with them, and they've all got squads of whatever, 15, 20, 25. So there's a lot of bodies out there. There's a lot of girls playing rugby. So there's a lot working on the ground. What they look at on TV, looking at Bavin, et cetera, or Linda Jujong or whoever else going over to the Claremont, they can see a pathway. They can see and it's the IRFU really need to take what's been done at grassroots level and bring women's rugby onto the next level.
Very good. And that just leaves Keno.
I have to say, I think the lads covered it very well between the lot of them. There's not a huge amount left to say. So I might just kind of recap what the average listener can do today, tomorrow, this week, next week, this month, throughout the year. Go to games. Go to international games. Go to provincial games. Go to AIL games. Just go to them. Watch them. Bring your family. Bring the kids, especially the kids. Watch them on telly or on streaming if you can't get to them, if they're available. And if they're not available, ask why are they not available? Tweet RTE, why isn't this game available? Talk about the games and players online and with your family and friends. Just talk about the sport. So we need to make a broader interest happen in the women's game, the kind of audience it deserves, because it's a good sport, because it's good to watch. It's entertaining. There's some great skill and great players available there. Yeah, don't be afraid to admire what skillful players we have. I mean, I'm going to be probably the fourth person to mention her now, but Bavin Parsons, her run being tackled by the eighth person is exactly the kind of thing that will turn a kid's head to going, wow, that I want to do that. That absolutely could start a kid's career. You could end up with another international off the back of just that clip. Push for parity of treatment and funding from the IRFU, the provinces and the clubs. Men's game, women's game should be treated equally. We need to start pushing that message. And get involved. Volunteer with your local club. Help them recruit more players. Help coach the girls under 10 team. Maybe try to organise, get them down to your kid's school to do a session, just an introductory session. All very simple things that anyone can do. Don't be afraid to get involved.
Absolutely. Well, that's brilliant. Keigo wants to jump in. Off you go. Yes.
Sorry, I had a brainwave, which is dangerous. And I have a challenge for the IRFU. We've got the November games coming up, right? And they're going to be sold out. What they need to do is pair the women's games tickets with the men's games tickets. So whether now, I don't know whether it's a discount or whatever, but we can fill the Aviva. We can do a double header there, or we can fill Aviva and Donnybrook, whatever way you want to do it. But we've got to group those tickets together. And then we get eyeballs on the game. You get eyeballs on the game, you see the players doing the thing. Football made the equal pay agreement a couple of weeks ago, which is to be applauded. We can't be beaten by football on anything to do with equal rights. So let's step up. IRFU, I know you're listening because you've got the Jeff calendar up in the office there. Don't look at the month of June. It's very filthy. But let's think our way around this problem. Let's get people in the stadium, because once the eyeballs are on, the eyeballs won't leave. And everyone on social media share absolutely everything.
But sorry, if I could jump in, and I'm going to agree rather than bully. I just an extension of what Keigo said. Like a lot of committee members in clubs across Ireland, they love the all international tickets and all these ticket allocations, whether you're a senior club or a junior club or whatever the case may be. I think the allocations on what you're doing for women's and girls rugby in your club should mean you should get less or more. And then by extension, if you're doing stuff for disability rugby as well, get a few more. So encourage these clubs that aren't involved with promoting women's game or girls game. Look, you're going to get less than the club that is. Simple as that. You know, that might get their proverbial asses moving on supporting women's rugby.
Sticks and carrots.
Sticks and carrots, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, yeah, Rich, go on. Yeah,
yeah. Just a quick couple of points. Firstly, what Keigo mentioned about coupling women's games with the full internationals works. We've been doing it here in JIB in our own little way, so that whenever there's a big match between teams, if there's the final of our league here, there is a women's match immediately preceding that. So in that way, we've managed to promote the game. And the other thing is how we support this actually boils down to the language we use. So the minute we stop describing Bavin Parsons as a women's rugby player and actually call her a bloody awesome, or a left wing even, that's how basic this is. That's how basic we have to be.
Absolutely, yeah. No, no, I'm supposed to be the referee and I'm not supposed to be taking part in this, but I just for this particular topic, I mean, I've been doing these podcasts for a while and I've never seen as many nodding heads at the same time when people have been, we've been discussing something. So we're all in agreement. And I think it's very important that it is people like us who are mad about rugby in general. Anyway, we've grown up following the men's team, Leinster in Ireland. We still follow them and all this kind of stuff. But it's the likes of us that's going to help raise the women's game, because the fact is that the game has been moving on. They have been improving. There actually have been double headers in the past, but that was once. And, you know, it really worked. And why aren't they doing it again? So it's like they keep making steps forward, but then they fall back. They stop having the double headers. You've got the changing room thing. You've got all these things. These things keep happening, that three steps forward, two back. And it's up to us to keep. And on Sunday, I think it was brilliant. I think, you commentated that the atmosphere on Twitter, if you can call it an atmosphere on Twitter, was amazing. Everyone was pumped up for the game. It was really, we were excited. It was like any Ireland game you've ever seen. It didn't matter. It was men or women or whatever, we got into it. We were excited by the win. We were critical when they weren't playing well, things were going wrong, because that's normal. We do that with all teams, but it was great. And we just basically want to see more of that and less of the bad stuff. Another issue brought up there, talking about the importance of girls teams and clubs, you have issues there where the senior women's team gets knocked off a training pitch so the under 23s can have a training session, things like that. All that has to stop. Now I think I've ranted on enough. You've never heard Wayne Barnes or Nigel Owens do this in the middle of the match, but I just thought I'd jump in for that one. And when it comes to the scoring, listen, that was a great round, lads. We need you both two converted tries each, and we'll move on from there. So that has the score line after three quarters. It's Donkeys 39, Tigers 42. So it's all to play for going into the final quarter. So listen, no pressure, lads. This is the fourth quarter, and the question, this is going to be for Tom. Okay. And your question is this: whatever we want to say about the United Rugby Championship, the fact that it is something new in the sport of rugby union means that a large section of fans is guaranteed to hate it before a ball is even kicked. So outside of Ireland, which nation will hate it most, and why is it Wales?
I'd just like to apologize to my colleague, my teammate Keen. I feel like I've been thrown a hospital pass in the last 10 minutes of the game, where I have to talk about Celtic brothers across the Irish Sea. It's a bit early on a Tuesday night to be quoting Churchill, but Welsh rugby is like it's that riddle, riddle and mystery and wrapped in enigma. There's a certain cohort of just my experience of A, Twitter, obviously, but B, going over to games in Wales over the last 10, 15 years, lucky enough to have been over in the foregrounds over the time. There's just a certain percentage of their fans that no matter what way it was rebranded, if it was going to be the Tom Jones, Shirley Bassey, Daffodil Cup, they still wouldn't buy in. At the end of the day, they only want one thing, which is the Anglo-Welsh League. The grass will always be greener there. And I've learned, well, you know, I try to be a rational enough person on Twitter. I like engaging with different points of view and challenging my own. But to go back to the title of this show, you know, you just ultimately have to not argue with donkeys eventually, because no matter what you say, it's you're just never going to get through. Every possible knock-on that will happen in the first game, or every missed infringement by the referee, or if Ulster get too many Friday night kickoffs, or if there's too many kickoffs at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, it'll always be attributed to some Illuminati IRFU conspiracy about the Irish running the league. So I've learned to filter them out, and I've learned that to filter out maybe some of the megaphone journalists in Wales that blow up that point of view as well for their own clicks. That said, I do have a lot of sympathy with what I call a lot of genuine Welsh fans that I've met over the years that have a vested interest in their teams, whether it be the Scarlets, the Dragons, the Ospreys, not so much the Blues. But the relationship with the clubs and the Welsh Rugby Union, to me, is the reason why a lot of the angst is, and that's never going to change whether they're playing in an Anglo-Welsh League or in this URC. They still have to deal with each other because they've shared players, and until that changes, which I literally after 20 years of looking at professional rugby, I can't see it changing. So, in answer to your question, which fans will not like the rebranding of the URC? It's, I'm afraid, just like the Six Nations title, it'll go to Wales again. I love a lot of them, but it is hard work trying to have rational discussions. I generally find the people that shout the loudest and are a small minority, in fairness, don't really talk about much rugby on the pitch. You know, a lot of it's politics, a lot of it's stuff that's relevant, but I haven't walked in their shoes either. So, but as I said, I've learned to stop arguing with donkeys.
Very good. Okay, Keno, over to you. Maybe do some of the other countries.
Well, that's the thing. Like I reckon you probably nailed it in the question that it is going to be Wales. For example, I don't think it's going to be South Africa. I mean, I do think it'll be growing pains for South African fans, probably for a year or two. I mean, this is essentially replacing Super Rugby for them. So it'll be a bit of an adjustment going from, you know, swinging gate defences and coast-to-coast worldie tries in Sydney and Canterbury to wings with hypothermia and kicks being blown backward over your head in the sports ground. There has also been a bit of grumbling about money issues in South Africa. I know there was a bit of a to-do over Saru threatening to replace Stormers with Cheetahs in the URC if they didn't sort out some financial issues there. I'm not sure what's exactly happened with that. It broke about 2 weeks ago that it was coming to a head there, which is again less than ideal coming into the tournament starting in several days. And there was a bit of a view that this entering into this tournament might have been a bit of a cash grab by Saru. But I honestly think that'll even out once it starts going, because I think the kind of play in the Northern Hemisphere will suit the South African clubs' styles better than Super Rugby did. And I think some of the top-tier head-to-head matches will really start winning some of their fans over to it and maybe even get some rivalries going. you know, I mean, there was a couple of rivalry, inter-country rivalries here and there in the pros, pro numbers and what's it we call it, but they never really took hold. But I think there's potential for real ones to bed down between South Africa and some of the others. I think having them in similar time zones is going to win fans over as well. They're not going to have to look an entire competition over the edge of their bowl of cornflakes anymore, which really, I think, they'll be able to have a beer with the game and not be seen as an alcoholic. And then once they get into Europe, it'll be a whole step up again. I think they're going to flourish over time. I think there's going to be some really great rugby played, and I reckon they're probably going to end up loving it as much as we do in Ireland.
Very good. Okay, over to you, Rich. What do you think of how do you think the fans and maybe the other nations will take it?
I still think the ones that will moan the most are the Welsh. They're a funny lot. And, you know, I'm trying not to be disparaging here, but they are a funny lot. They seem to support their national team, but then when it comes to their regional teams, you know, they just don't. And you know, much like Tom, you know, I've spoken to quite a few Welsh people, and and this is how basic this is, they actually don't even like their regions. They would much rather have a battle between Pontypool and Pontypridd, you know, than support Newport, because what's Newport to me? I don't live in Swansea anyway, so hey, you know. The only one that probably gets away from that is the Scarlets, because the Scarlets has a history of being a town club. And I think Cardiff are trying to do that now. Cardiff have now got rid of this Blues thing, and they are now Cardiff Rugby, which they were previously. So I think there's something in their psyche that they just can't get this inter-regional rivalry as the inter-provincial rivalry that exists in Ireland, which is a shame, because really I don't think they've ever bought into it. They'd much rather watch Llanelli play Leicester Tigers or Newport play Gloucester than have a game as between Cardiff and Newport, you know, who and the Ospreys, who are very few miles between each other. You know, they just haven't seemed to develop this. And just as a final point, I agree with what Kino's saying about the South Africans. I think that the South Africans will flourish in this competition. That depends on how seriously they take it. I think they will take it seriously simply because of the money that's involved and the money that's been made available. And money, as we know, moves mountains. So I think they will certainly do so. The Scots and the Italians, you know, where else would they play? And I think it's a good league for them to play in. If you think about it, it's a bloody awesome league. It's the only league that transcends hemispheres. So, I'm all for it, provided always that you get the South Africans, and I think they will, you know, throwing in their decent full sides and not some scratch sides that they pick up on a Friday afternoon for a Saturday morning kickoff.
Very good. And that just leaves Keigo.
Well, Rich, I'm going to do a Simon Gagan and go on a solo run, and you're not going to know what I'm about to do. So here we go. Tom talks about he won't argue with donkeys. He's been arguing with donkeys all night. Don't trust a word he says. Keane just stole everything I said about South African rugby and pretended it was his own just there. It's going to be a long ball game. Once South Africa get up to speed, it's going to be brilliant. The Welsh people. We love the Welsh people. Charlotte Church is a great singer, pretty bad on the wing, but I think the Scarlets may be their saviour. I think if the Scarlets can perform, because we love watching them, we love how they play the game. Richie hit the nail on the head there. They are the community team, I guess, in Wales. They haven't tried to change too much. Because if you are around a load of old lads in a pub after a game, they will go back in time. And they do go back in time to Llanelli and Leicester, and all these people serve a bit of a cold there. So Wales never came through with the rest of us to the professional game. They love that, the club game that Rich was talking about. But I think Scarlets may be their answer. If Scarlets end up performing well, they're going to shut up. They're going to stop giving out. But I don't think they will. I think we're a couple of years away from that. We're a couple of years away from the South Africans kind of finding their level here. As Kino says, once they do find that level, that's going to be brilliant for us in our blue underwear. But as of right now, Wales are going to struggle. They're going to be the people who hate it the most. The Italians are going to love it because they're going to have some big victories through the year. The Scots are still there, thereabouts, and blah, blah, blah. But I do think if Scarlets perform and perform well throughout the year, Wales will just shut up. And we'll be reading your man in the Sunday Times and laughing about it as we do, as normal. It's all up to the Scarlets, no pressure.
Very good. Okay, so listen, lads, I'm telling you, the scores are very close here now. We've got some broken play just to help decide it. Anyone want to jump in and maybe get the final points to win the game rugby?
I just starting off the podcast and just finishing off the same theme. I'd like to disagree with Keogh on his views of the Scarlets. I think Ospreys are the team to watch in Wales this year. I think Gareth Arnscombe, they've nicked one of their really good back row players, Jack Morgan. Adam Beard showed his worth. I think the Ospreys slowly building. They've got a really good 15 that could actually put it up to most of the teams in it. So George North as well. Yeah, so I think it's, I don't know what the name of that bridge is there where they always have, they throw apples and it's halfway between Clonetley and Swansea. But I think it's the black side of the bridge that are going to be the better Welsh team this year.
Very good. Anyone else?
Yeah. Can I just take a moment to say...
Please do.
Oh my God. Live competition rugby for Leinster on Saturday. We're playing the Bulls. Porter, Levy and Ringrose have all been passed fit and available for selection. We have a live crowd of 38,000. And if you see someone hyperventilating or crying before they even cross the threshold of Lansdowne Road, it's probably going to be me.
Ooh, very good. That's a good finish there. Keogh's busy right there. Why don't you say it, man?
I was just going to say I feel dirty because I agree with Keane. That's not how I wanted to end this show. But you kind of get through the week, you get through the work week, and you feel that match day creeping up on you. You know, we've all been coming through all sort of weird stuff in the background. And to get in there and to scream... it's just I had to pay my mortgage yesterday, so I have to sell a loan between now and Saturday to get in there. But I will try and be there. If not, I'll be screaming in my house so that everyone will leave my house. But yeah, giddy up. It's going to be a massive weekend.
Brilliant. Okie dokie. Listen, we're going to wrap it up there, but we come to the final scores. And Jesus, I tell you, this hasn't been easy now. What I did in this round was, I mean, before we got to the broken play section, now what I did going into this round, I have to thank Keogh for saving using his Zoom for this call, because mine had some gremlins in mind. So I threw the donkeys a few sympathy points even before the round started for that. There were some good points made by everyone, but I gave a few more points to the donkeys for the bit of help before the game. So that got us to, before the broken play, that got us to 55-49. But then we had a last-minute try there from Keno. His enthusiasm for Saturday got me excited. He got the ball over the line. He just about got the ball over the line. So that made it 55-54. So the question was, would the Tigers get the conversion to win the game? That's the question. That's the question we're asking. And when I realized that the first person to actually take the trouble to use the name, don't argue with donkeys, was Coleman of the Tigers, I think that final conversion goes over the bar. I can't read what Keogh's written on his page there, but I think he just snuck over at the last minute. Gives us the final score of Donkeys 55, Tigers 56. And with a scoreline like that, we never know. Maybe the South Africans will feel like they're still in Super Rugby after all.
Sorry, is that my lawyer? Is that, yeah. Do you know the number for the Court for Arbitration and Sport in Lausanne? Lodge a fairly serious complaint here, because I've been complimenting the host the entire thing and we still lost. Yeah, he bullied me the whole way through. It's ridiculous. And I even agreed with Keno. Like, it's just, I feel terrible. Sort this, will you?
Thanks. Sorry, when you get off the phone there, we're going to have our post-match interview. Listen, how do you feel? Shoving a microphone in your face now. How did you feel about that? We're talking to the captains now after the match. Keno, what did you feel after that performance?
Look, I feel that
we've been... Don't forget, we're before the watershed.
Okay. I feel that I feel the host was unfair. I feel that the opposition played many illegal tactics. I feel that the Donkeys were by far the sexier team. And I feel that this aggression will not stand.
Okay. And the winning captain, congratulations, Keno. Debut win on your first appearance on the show. How do you feel about that now?
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, absolutely delighted. You know, it's absolutely brilliant, you know, to be here. People love, you know me and love me in the audience and all. Anyways, absolutely brilliant. Love it. You know, it's great. It's fantastic. All credit to the opposition there. You know, they played really well. But we will be referring the other captain's remarks on to World Rugby for further analysis and probably arbitration.
Brilliant stuff. And with that, back to Daryl Braden in the studio. Oh, no, sorry. Listen, thanks a million, lads. That was brilliant. After that nail-biting finish, we've come to the end of this latest edition of Don't Argue with Donkeys. Many thanks to Kigo, Kino, Rich, and Tom for taking part. And we'll hope to do this again soon, maybe at least once a month throughout the season, all going well. Before we go, I'll leave you with a recent quote plucked from the Ruggersphere. Former Wallaby international Nick Cummins, known as the Honey Badger and famed for his post-match interviews, recently posted a video on his Instagram feed where he can be seen carefully rescuing a sheep that was caught in a fence. Yeah. To caption the post, he wrote this: "In New Zealand, this would have gone down very differently." Until next time, stay safe, everyone. Slán.